For Aragorn, this part of his life was delightful. Saphira was as real and complex as any person. Her personality was eclectic, and at times completely alien, yet they understood each other on a profound level. Her actions and thoughts constantly revealed new aspects of her character. Once she caught an eagle, and instead of eating it, released it, saying,
"No hunter of the sky should end his days as prey. Better to die on the wing than pinned to the ground."
Aragorn's plan to let his family see Saphira was dispelled by Rohan's announcement and Saphira's own cautionary words. She was reluctant to be seen, and he, partly out of selfishness, agreed. The moment her existence was divulged, he knew that shouts, accusations, and fear would be directed at him, so he procrastinated. He told himself to wait for a sign that it was the right time. The night before Rohan was to leave, Aragorn went to talk with him. He stalked down the hallway to Rohan's open door. An oil lamp rested on a nightstand, painting the walls with warm, flickering light. The bedposts cast elongated shadows on empty shelves that rose to the ceiling. Rohan, his eyes shaded and the back of his neck tense, was rolling blankets around his clothes and belongings. He paused, then picked up something from the pillow and bounced it in his hand. It was a polished rock Aragorn had given him years ago. Rohan started to tuck it into the bundle, then stopped and set it on the shelf. A hard lump formed in Aragorn's throat, and he left. Strangers in Carver Hall. Breakfast was cold, but the tea was hot. Ice inside the windows had melted with the morning fire and soaked into the wood floor, staining it with dark puddles. Aragorn looked at Garrow and Rohan by the kitchen stove, and melodramatically reflected that this would be the last time he saw them together for many months. Rohan sat in a chair, lacing his boots. His full pack rested on the floor next to him. Garrow stood between them with his hands stuck deep into his pockets. His shirt hung loosely. His skin looked drawn. Despite the young men's cajolings, he refused to go with them. When pressed for a reason, he only said that it was for the best.
"Do you have everything?" Garrow asked Rohan.
"Yes." He nodded and took a small pouch from his pocket. Coins clinked as he handed it to Rohan.
"I've been saving this for you. It isn't much, but if you wish to buy some bauble or trinket, it will suffice."
"Thank you, but I won't be spending my money on trifles," said Rohan.
"Do what you will. It is yours," said Garrow. "I've nothing else to give you except a father's blessing. Take it if you wish, but it is worth little."
Rohan's voice was thick with emotion. "I would be honored to receive it."
"Then do, and go in peace," said Garrow, and kissed him on the forehead.
He turned and said in a louder voice,
"Do not think that I have forgotten you, Aragorn. I have words for both of you. It's time I said them as you are entering the world. Heed them, and they will serve you well."
He bent his gaze sternly on them.
"First, let no one rule your mind or body. Take special care that your thoughts remain unfettered. One may be a free man and yet be bound tighter than a slave. Give men your ear, but not your heart. Show respect for those in power, but don't follow them blindly. Judge with logic and reason, but comment not. Consider none your superior, whatever their rank or station in life. Treat all fairly, or they will seek revenge. Be careful with your money. Hold fast to your beliefs and others will listen."
He continued at a slower pace.
"Of the affairs of love, my only advice is to be honest. That's your most powerful tool to unlock a heart or gain forgiveness. That is all I have to say."
He seemed slightly self-conscious of his speech. He hoisted Rohan's pack.
"Now you must go. Dawn is approaching and Dempton will be waiting."
Rohan shouldered the pack and hugged Garrow. "I will return as soon as I can," he said.
"Good," replied Garrow. "But now go, and don't worry about us."
They parted reluctantly. Aragorn and Rohan went outside, then turned and waved. Garrow raised a bony hand, his eyes grave, and watched as they trudged to the road. After a long moment, he shut the door. As the sound carried through the morning air, Rohan halted. Aragorn looked back and surveyed the land. His eyes lingered on the lone buildings. They looked pitifully small and fragile. A thin finger of smoke trailing up from the house was the only proof that the snowbound farm was inhabited.
"There is our whole world," Roran observed somberly.
Aragorn shivered impatiently and grumbled, "A good one, too." Roran nodded, then straightened his shoulders and headed into his new future. The house disappeared from view as they descended the hill. It was still early when they reached Carver Hall, but they found the smithy doors already open. The air inside was pleasantly warm. Baldur slowly worked two large bellows attached to the side of a stone forge filled with sparkling coals. Before the forge stood a black anvil and an iron-bound barrel filled with brine. From a line of neck-high poles protruding from the walls hung rows of items, giant tongs, pliers, hammers in every shape and weight, chisels, angles, center punches, files, rasps, lathes, bars of iron and steel, waiting to be shaped, vices, shears, picks and shovels. Horst and Dempton stood next to a long table. Dempton approached with a smile beneath his flamboyant red moustache.
"Roran, I'm glad you came. There's going to be more work than I can handle with my new grindstones. Are you ready to go?"
Roran hefted his pack. "Yes. Do we leave soon?"
"I've a few things to take care of first, but we'll be off within the hour."
Aragorn shifted his feet as Dempton turned to him, tugging at the corner of his moustache.
"You must be Aragorn. I would offer you a job too, but Roran got the only one. Maybe in a year or two, eh?"
Aragorn smiled uneasily and shook his hand. The man was friendly. Under other circumstances, Aragorn would have liked him, but right then he sourly wished that the miller had never come to Carver Hall. Dempton huffed.
"Good, very good."
He returned his attention to Roran and started to explain how a mill worked.
"They're ready to go," interrupted Horst, gesturing at the table where several bundles rested. "You can take them whenever you want to."
They shook hands, then Horst left the smithy, beckoning to Aragorn on the way out. Interested, Aragorn followed. He found the smith standing in the street with his arms crossed. Aragorn thrust his thumb back toward the miller and asked, "What do you think of him?" Horst rumbled,
"A good man. He'll do fine with Roran."
He absently brushed metal filings off his apron, then put a massive hand on Aragorn's shoulder.
"Lad, do you remember the fight you had with Sloane?"
"If you're asking about payment for the meat, I haven't forgotten."
"No, I trust you, lad. What I wanted to know is if you still have that blue stone."
Aragorn's heart fluttered. Why does he want to know? Maybe someone saw Saphira. Struggling not to panic, he said, "I do, but why do you ask?"
"As soon as you return home, get rid of it."
Horst overrode Aragorn's exclamation.
"Two men arrived here yesterday. Strange fellows dressed in black and carrying swords. It made my skin crawl just to look at them. Last evening they started asking people if a stone like yours had been found. They're at it again today."
Aragorn blanched.
"No one with any sense said anything. They know trouble when they see it. But I could name a few people who will talk."
Dread filled Aragorn's heart. Whoever had sent the stone into the spine had finally tracked it down. Or perhaps the Empire had learned of Saphira. He did not know which would be worse.
"Think, think. The egg is gone. It's impossible for them to find it now. But if they know what it was, it'll be obvious what happened. Saphira might be in danger."
It took all of his self-control to retain a casual air. "Thanks for telling me. Do you know where they are?" He was proud that his voice barely trembled.
"I didn't warn you because I thought you needed to meet those men. Leave Carver Hall. Go home."
"All right," said Aragorn, to placate the smith. "If you think I should."
"I do."
Horst's face softened.
"I may be overreacting, but these strangers give me a bad feeling. It would be better if you stay home until they leave. I'll try to keep them away from your farm, though it may not do any good."
Aragorn looked at him gratefully. He wished he could tell him about Saphira.
"I'll leave now," he said, and hurried back to Roran.
Aragorn clasped his cousin's arm and bade him farewell.
"Aren't you going to stay a while?" Roran asked with surprise.
Aragorn almost laughed. For some reason, the question struck him as funny.
"There's nothing for me to do, and I'm not going to stand around until you go."
"Well," said Roran doubtfully, "I guess this is the last time we'll see each other for a few months."
"I'm sure it won't seem that long," said Aragorn hastily.
Take care and come back soon. He hugged Roran, then left. Horst was still in the street. Aware that the smith was watching, Aragorn headed to the outskirts of Carvajal. Once the smithy was out of sight, he ducked behind a house and sneaked back through the village. Aragorn kept to the shadows as he searched each street, listening for the slightest noise. His thoughts flashed to his room where his bow hung. He wished that it was in his hand. He prowled across Carvajal, avoiding everyone until he heard a sibilant voice from around a house. Although his ears were keen, he had to strain to hear what was being said.
"When did this happen?"
The words were smooth like oiled glass and seemed to worm their way through the air. Underlying the speech was a strange hiss that made his scalp prickle.
"About 3 months ago,"
someone else answered. Aragorn identified him as Sloane.
"Shite's blood! He's telling them—"
He resolved to punch Sloane the next time they met. A third person spoke. The voice was deep and moist. It conjured up images of creeping decay, mould, and other things best left untouched.
"Are you sure? We would hate to think you had made a mistake. If that were so, it would be most unpleasant."
Aragorn could imagine only too well what they might do. Would anyone but the Empire dare threaten people like that? Probably not. But whoever sent the egg might be powerful enough to use force with impunity.
"Yeah, I'm sure. He had it then. I'm not lying. Plenty of people know about it. Go ask them."
Sloane sounded shaken. He said something else that Aragorn did not catch.
"They have been rather uncooperative."
The words were derisive. There was a pause.
"Your information has been helpful. We will not forget you."
Aragorn believed him. Sloane muttered something, then Aragorn heard someone hurrying away. He peered around the corner to see what was happening. Two tall men stood in the street. Both were dressed in long black cloaks that were lifted by sheaths poking past their legs. On their shirts were insignias, intricately wrought with silver thread. Hoods shaded their faces, and their hands were covered by gloves. Their backs were oddly humped, as though their clothes were stuffed with padding. Aragorn shifted slightly to get a better view. One of the strangers stiffened and grunted peculiarly to his companion. They both swiveled around and sank into crouches. Aragorn's breath caught. Mortal fear clenched him. His eyes locked onto their hidden faces, and a stifling power fell over his mind, keeping him in place. He struggled against it and screamed to himself, "Move!" His legs swayed, but to no avail. The strangers stalked toward him with a smooth, noiseless gait. He knew they could see his face now. They were almost to the corner, hands grasping at swords.
"Aragorn!"
He jerked as his name was called. The strangers froze in place and hissed. Brom hurried toward him from the side, head bare and staff in hand. The strangers were blocked from the old man's view. Aragorn tried to warn him, but his tongue and arms would not stir.
"Aragorn!" cried Brom again.
The strangers gave Aragorn one last look, then slipped away between the houses. Aragorn collapsed to the ground, shivering. Sweat beaded on his forehead and made his palms sticky. The old man offered Aragorn a hand and pulled him up with a strong arm.
"You look sick. Is all well?"
Aragorn gulped and nodded mutely. His eyes flickered around, searching for anything unusual.
"I just got dizzy all of a sudden. It's passed. It was very odd. I don't know why it happened."
"You'll recover," said Brom. "But perhaps it would be better if you went home."
"Yes, I have to get home. Have to get there before they do. I think you're right. Maybe I'm getting ill."
"Then home is the best place for you. It's a long walk, but I'm sure you will feel better by the time you arrive. Let me escort you to the road."
Aragorn did not protest as Brom took his arm and led him away at a quick pace. Brom's staff crunched in the snow as they passed the houses.
"Why were you looking for me?"
Brom shrugged.
"Simple curiosity. I learned you were in town and wondered if you had remembered the name of that trader."
"Trader? What's he talking about?"
Aragorn stared blankly. His confusion caught the attention of Brom's probing eyes.
"No," he said, and then amended himself. "I'm afraid I still don't remember."
Brom sighed gruffly, as if something had been confirmed, and rubbed his eagle nose.
"Well then, If you do, come tell me. I am most interested in this trader who pretends to know so much about dragons.
Aragorn nodded with a distracted air. They walked in silence to the road, then Brom said,
Hasten home. I don't think it would be a good idea to tarry on the way.
He offered a gnarled hand. Aragorn shook it, but as he let go, something in Brom's hand caught on his mitt and pulled it off. It fell to the ground. The old man picked it up.
Clumsy of me,
he apologized and handed it back. As Aragorn took the mitt, Brom's strong fingers wrapped around his wrist and twisted sharply. His palm briefly faced upward, revealing the silvery mark. Brom's eyes glinted, but he let Aragorn yank his hand back and jam it into the mitt. Goodbye, Aragorn forced out, perturbed, and hurried down the road. Behind him, he heard Brom whistling a merry tune.
Flight of Destiny.
Aragorn's mind churned as he sped on his way. He ran as fast as he could, refusing to stop even when his breath came in great gasps. As he pounded down the cold road, he cast out with his mind for Saphira, but she was too far away for him to contact. He thought about what to say to Garrow. There was no choice now. He would have to reveal Saphira. He arrived home, panting for air and heart pounding. Garrow stood by the barn with the horses. Aragorn hesitated. Should I talk to him now? He won't believe me unless Saphira is here. I'd better find her first. He slipped around the farm and into the forest. Saphira! He shouted with his thoughts.
I come,
was the dim reply. Through the words he sensed her alarm. He waited impatiently, though it was not long before the sound of her wings filled the air. She landed amid a gout of smoke.
What happened? She queried.
He touched her shoulder and closed his eyes. Calming his mind, he quickly told her what had occurred. When he mentioned the strangers, Saphira recoiled. She reared and roared deafeningly, then whipped her tail over his head. He scrambled back in surprise, ducking as her tail hit a snowdrift. Bloodlust and fear emanated from her in great, sickening waves.
Fire! Enemies! Death! Murderers!
What's wrong? He put all of his strength into the words, but an iron wall surrounded her mind, shielding her thoughts. She let out another roar and gouged the earth with her claws, tearing the frozen ground.
Stop it! Garrow will hear! Oaths betrayed, souls killed, eggs shattered, blood everywhere, murderers!
Frantic, he blocked out Saphira's emotions and watched her tail. When it flicked past him, he dashed to her side and grabbed a spike on her back. Clutching it, he pulled himself into the small hollow at the base of her neck and held on tightly as she reared again.
Enough, Saphira!
He bellowed. Her stream of thoughts ceased abruptly. He ran a hand over her scales. Everything's going to be all right. She crouched and her wings rushed upward. They hung there for an instant, then drove down as she flung herself into the sky. Aragorn yelled as the ground dropped away and they rose above the trees. Turbulence buffeted him, snatching the breath out of his mouth. Saphira ignored his terror and banked toward the spine. Underneath, he glimpsed the farm and the Anora River. His stomach convulsed. He tightened his arms around Saphira's neck and concentrated on the scales in front of his nose, trying not to vomit as she continued to climb. When she leveled off, he gained the courage to glance around. The air was so cold that frost accumulated on his eyelashes. They had reached the mountains faster than he had thought possible. From the air, the peaks looked like giant razor-sharp teeth waiting to slash them to ribbons. Saphira wobbled unexpectedly, and Aragorn heaved over her side. He wiped his lips, tasting bile, and buried his head against her neck.
"We have to go back,"
he pleaded. "The strangers are coming to the farm. Garrow has to be warned. Turn around!" There was no answer. He reached for her mind, but was blocked by a barrier of roiling fear and anger. Determined to make her turn around, he grimly wormed into her mental armor. He pushed at its weak places, undermined the stronger sections, and fought to make her listen, but to no avail. Soon mountains surrounded them, forming tremendous white walls broken by granite cliffs. Blue glaciers sat between the summits like frozen rivers. Long valleys and ravines opened beneath them. He heard the dismayed screech of birds far below as Saphira soared into view. He saw a herd of woolly goats bounding from ledge to ledge on a rocky bluff. Aragorn was battered by swirling gusts from Saphira's wings, and whenever she moved her neck, he was tossed from side to side. She seemed tireless. He was afraid she was going to fly through the night. Finally, as darkness fell, she tilted into a shallow dive. He looked ahead and saw that they were headed for a small clearing in a valley. Saphira spiraled down, leisurely drifting over the treetops. She pulled back as the ground neared, filled her wings with air, and landed on her rear legs. Her powerful muscles rippled as they absorbed the shock of impact. She dropped to all fours and skipped a step to keep her balance. Aragorn slid off without waiting for her to fold her wings. As he struck the ground, his knees buckled and his cheeks slammed against the snow. He gasped as excruciating pain seared through his legs, sending tears to his eyes. His muscles, cramped from clenching for so long, shook violently. He rolled onto his back, shivering, and stretched his limbs as best he could. Then he forced himself to look down. Two large blots darkened his wool pants on the insides of his thighs. He touched the fabric. It was wet. Alarmed, he peeled off the pants and grimaced. The insides of his legs were raw and bloody. The skin was gone, rubbed off by Saphira's hard scales. He gingerly felt the abrasions and winced. Cold bit into him as he pulled the pants back on, and he cried out as they scraped against the sensitive wounds. He tried to stand, but his legs would not support him. The deepening night obscured his surroundings, and the shaded mountains were unfamiliar. "I'm in the spine. I don't know where, during the middle of winter, with a crazed dragon, unable to walk or find shelter. Night is falling. I have to get back to the farm tomorrow. And the only way to do that is to fly, which I can't endure anymore." He took a deep breath. "Oh, I wish Saphira could breathe fire!" He turned his head and saw her next to him, crouched low to the ground. He put a hand on her side and found it trembling. The barrier in her mind was gone. Without it, her fear scorched through him. He clamped down on it and slowly smoothed her with gentle images. "Why do the strangers frighten you?"
"Murderers," she hissed.
"Garrow is in danger and you kidnap me on this ridiculous journey. Are you unable to protect me?" She growled deeply and snapped her jaws. "Ah, but if you think you can, why run?"
"Death is a poison."
He leaned on one elbow and stifled his frustration.
"Saphira, look where we are. The sun is down, and your flight has stripped my legs as easily as I would scale a fish. Is that what you wanted?"
"No."
"Then why did you do it?" he demanded.
Through his link with Saphira, he felt her regret for his pain, but not for her actions. She looked away and refused to answer. The icy temperature deadened Aragorn's legs. Although it lessened the pain, he knew that his condition was not good. He changed tack.
"I'm going to freeze unless you make me a shelter or hollow so I can stay warm. Even a pile of pine needles and branches would do."
She seemed relieved that he had stopped interrogating her.
"There is no need. I will curl around you and cover you with my wings. The fire inside me will stay the cold."
Aragorn let his head thump back on the ground.
"Fine, but scrape the snow off the ground. It'll be more comfortable."
In answer, Saphira raised a drift with her tail, clearing it with one powerful stroke. She swept over the side again to remove the last few inches of hardened snow. He eyed the exposed dirt with distaste.
"I can't walk over there. You'll have to help me to it."
Her head, larger than his torso, swung over him and came to rest by his side. He stared at her large, sapphire-colored eyes and wrapped his hands around one of her ivory spikes. She lifted her head and slowly dragged him to the bare spot.
"Gently, gently."
Stars danced in his eyes as he slid over a rock, but he managed to hold on. After he let go, Saphira rolled on her side, exposing her warm belly. He huddled against the smooth scales of her underside. Her right wing extended over him and enclosed him in complete darkness, forming a living tent. Almost immediately, the air began to lose its frigidity. He pulled his arms inside his coat and tied the empty sleeves around his neck. For the first time, he noticed that hunger gnawed at his stomach, but it did not distract him from his main worry. Could he get back to the farm before the strangers did? And if not, what would happen?
Even if I can force myself to ride Saphira again, it'll be at least mid-afternoon before we get back. The strangers could be there long before that.
He closed his eyes and felt a single tear slide down his face.
What have I done?
The Doom of Innocence.
When Aragorn opened his eyes in the morning, he thought the sky had fallen. An unbroken plane of blue stretched over his head and slanted to the ground. Still half asleep, he reached out tentatively and felt a thin membrane under his fingers. It took him a long minute to realize what he was staring at. He bent his neck slightly and glared at the scaly haunch his head rested on. Slowly, he pushed his legs out from his fetal curl, scabs cracking. The pain had subsided some from yesterday, but he shrank from the thought of walking. Burning hunger reminded him of his missed meals. He summoned the energy to move and pounded weakly on Saphira's side.
"Hey, wake up!" he yelled.
She stirred and lifted her wing to admit a torrent of sunshine. He squinted as the snow momentarily blinded him. Beside him, Saphira stretched like a cat and yawned, flashing rows of white teeth. When Aragorn's eyes adjusted, he examined where they were. Imposing and unfamiliar mountains surrounded them, casting deep shadows on the clearing. Off to one side, he saw a trail cut through the snow and into the forest, where he could hear the muffled gurgling of a creek. Groaning, he stood and swayed, then stiffly hobbled to a tree. He grabbed one of its branches and threw his weight against it. It held, then broke with a loud crack. He ripped off the twigs, fit one end of the branch under his arm, and planted the other firmly in the ground. With the help of his improvised crutch, he limped to the Eistover Creek. He broke through the hard shell and cupped the clear, bitter water. Sated, he returned to the clearing. As he emerged from the trees, he finally recognized the mountains and the lay of the land. This was where, amid deafening sound, Saphira's egg had first appeared. He sagged against a rough trunk. There could be no mistake, for now he saw the grey trees that had been stripped of their needles in the explosion.
How did Saphira know where this was? She was still in the egg. My memories must have given her enough information to find it.
He shook his head in silent astonishment. Saphira was waiting patiently for him.
"Will you take me home?" he asked her.
She cocked her head.
"I know you don't want to, but you must. Both of us carry an obligation to Garrow. He has cared for me, and through me, you. Would you ignore that debt? What will be said of us in years to come if we don't return? That we hid like cowards while my uncle was in danger? I can hear it now, the story of the rider and his craven dragon. If there will be a fight, let's face it and not shy away. You are a dragon. Even a shade would run from you. Yet you crouch in the mountains like a frightened rabbit."
Aragorn meant to anger her, and he succeeded. A growl rippled in her throat as her head jabbed within a few inches of his face. She bared her fangs and glared at him, smoke trailing from her nostrils. He hoped that he had not gone too far. Her thoughts reached him, red with anger.
"Blood will meet blood. I will fight. Our weirds, our fates bind us. But try me not. I will take you because of debt owed, but into foolishness we fly."
"Foolishness or not," he said into the air, "there is no choice, we must go." He ripped his shirt in half and stuffed a piece into each side of his pants. Gingerly, he hoisted himself onto Saphira and took a tight hold on her neck.
"This time," he told her, "fly lower and faster. Time is of the essence."
"Don't let go," she cautioned,
then surged into the sky. They rose above the forest and leveled out immediately, barely staying above the branches. Aragorn's stomach lurched. He was glad it was empty.
"Faster, faster," he urged.
She said nothing, but the beat of her wings increased. He screwed his eyes shut and hunched his shoulders. He had hoped that the extra padding of his shirt would protect him, but every movement sent pangs through his legs. Soon lines of hot blood trickled down his calves. Concern emanated from Saphira. She went even faster now, her wings straining. The land sped past as if it were being pulled out from under them. Aragorn imagined that to someone on the ground they were just a blur. By early afternoon, Palancar Valley lay before them. Clouds obscured his vision to the south. Carver Hall was to the north. Saphira glided down while Aragorn searched for the farm. When he spotted it, fear jolted him. A black plume with orange flames dancing at its base rose from the farm.
"Saphira," he pointed, "get me down there, now!"
She locked her wings and tilted into a steep dive, hurtling groundward at a frightening rate. Then she altered her dive slightly, so they sped toward the forest. He yelled over the screaming air, "Land in the fields!" He held on tighter as they plummeted. Saphira waited until they were only 100 feet off the ground before driving her wings downward in several powerful strokes. She landed heavily, breaking his grip. He crashed to the ground, then staggered upright, gasping for breath. The house had been blasted apart. Timbers and boards that had been walls and roof were strewn across a wide area. The wood was pulverized as if a giant hammer had smashed it. Sooty shingles lay everywhere. A few twisted metal plates were all that remained of the stove. The snow was perforated with smashed white crockery and chunks of bricks from the chimney. Thick, oily smoke billowed from the barn, which burned fiercely. The farm animals were gone, either killed or frightened away.
"Uncle!"
Aragorn ran to the wreckage, hunting through the destroyed rooms for Garrow. There was no sign of him.
"Uncle!"
Aragorn cried again. Saphira walked around the house and came to his side.
"Sorrow breeds here," she said.
"This wouldn't have happened if you hadn't run away with me."
"You would not be alive if we had stayed."
"Look at this," he screamed. "We could have warned Garrow. It's your fault he didn't get away."
He slammed his fist against a pole, splitting the skin on his knuckles. Blood dripped down his fingers as he stalked out of the house. He stumbled to the path that led to the road and bent down to examine the snow. Several tracks were before him, but his vision was blurry and he could barely see.
"Am I going blind?" he wondered.
With a shaking hand, he touched his cheeks and found them wet. A shadow fell on him as Saphira loomed overhead, sheltering him with her wings.
"Take comfort. All may not be lost."
He looked up at her, searching for hope.
"Examine the trail. My eyes see only 2 sets of prints. Garrow could not have been taken from here."
He focused on the trampled snow, the faint imprints of 2 pairs of leather boots headed toward the house. On top of those were traces of the same 2 sets of boots leaving, and whoever had made the departing tracks had been carrying the same weight as when they arrived.
"You're right. Garrow has to be here."
He leapt to his feet and hurried back to the house.
"I will search around the buildings and in the forest," said Saphira.
Aragorn scrambled into the remains of the kitchen and frantically started digging through a pile of rubble. Pieces of debris that he could not have moved normally now seemed to shift on their own accord. A cupboard, mostly intact, stymied him for a second, then he heaved and sent it flying. As he pulled on a board, something rattled behind him. He spun around, ready for an attack. A hand extended from under a section of collapsed roof. It moved weakly, and he grasped it with a cry.
"Uncle, can you hear me?"
There was no response. Aragorn tore at pieces of wood, heedless of the splinters that pierced his hands. He quickly exposed an arm and shoulder, but was barred by a heavy beam. He threw his shoulder at it and shoved with every fiber of his being, but it defied his efforts.
"Saphira, I need you."
She came immediately. Wood cracked under her feet as she crawled over the ruined walls. Without a word, she nosed past him and set her side against the beam. Her claws sunk into what was left of the floor, her muscles strained. With a grating sound, the beam lifted, and Aragorn rushed under it. Garrow lay on his stomach, his clothes mostly torn off. Aragorn pulled him out of the rubble. As soon as they were clear, Saphira released the beam, leaving it to crash to the floor. Aragorn dragged Garrow out of the destroyed house and eased him to the ground. Dismayed, he touched his uncle gently. His skin was grey, lifeless and dry, as if a fever had burned off any sweat. His lip was split, and there was a long scrape on his cheekbone, but that was not the worst. Deep, ragged burns covered most of his body. They were chalky white and oozed clear liquid. A cloying, sickening smell hung over him, the odor of rotting fruit. His breath came in short jerks, each one sounding like a death rattle.
"Murderers," hissed Saphira.
"Don't say that. He can still be saved. We have to get him to Gertrude. I can't carry him to Carvajal, though."
Severa presented an image of Garrow hanging under her while she flew.
Can you lift, both of us?
I must.
Aragorn dug through the rubble until he found a board and leather thongs. He had Saphira pierce a hole with a claw at each of the board's corners, then he looped a piece of leather through each hole and tied them to her forelegs. After checking to make sure the knots were secure, he rolled Garrow onto the board and lashed him down. As he did, a scrap of black cloth fell from his uncle's hand. It matched the stranger's clothing. He angrily stuffed it in a pocket, mounted Saphira, and closed his eyes as his body settled into a steady throb of pain.
Now!
She leapt up, hind legs digging into the ground. Her wings clawed at the air as she slowly climbed. Tendons strained and popped as she battled gravity. For a long, painful second, nothing happened. But then she lunged forward powerfully and they rose higher. Once they were over the forest, Aragorn told her,
"Follow the road. It'll give you enough room if you have to land."
"I might be seen."
"It doesn't matter anymore."
She argued no further as she veered to the road and headed for Carvajal. Garrow swung wildly underneath them. Only the slender leather cords kept him from falling. The extra weight slowed Saphira. Before long, her head sagged, and there was froth at her mouth. She struggled to continue, yet they were almost a league from Carvajal when she locked her wings and sank toward the road. Her hind feet touched with a shower of snow. Aragorn tumbled off her, landing heavily on his side to avoid hurting his legs. He struggled to his feet and worked to untie the leather from Saphira's legs. Her thick panting filled the air.
"Find a safe place to rest," he said. "I don't know how long I'll be gone, so you're going to have to take care of yourself for a while."
"I'll wait," she said.
He gritted his teeth and began to drag Garrow down the road. The first few steps sent an explosion of agony through him.
"I can't do this!"
he howled at the sky, then took a few more steps. His mouth locked into a snarl. He stared at the ground between his feet as he forced himself to hold a steady pace. It was a fight against his unruly body, a fight he refused to lose. The minutes dragged by at an excruciating rate. Each yard he covered seemed many times that. With desperation, he wondered if Carvajal still existed or if the strangers had burned it down too. After a time, through a haze of pain, he heard shouting and looked up. Brom was running toward him, eyes large, hair awry, and one side of his head caked with dried blood. He waved his arms wildly before dropping his staff and grabbing Aragorn's shoulders, saying something in a loud voice. Aragorn blinked uncomprehendingly. Without warning, the ground rushed up to meet him. He tasted blood, then blacked out.
Death Watch. Dreams roiled in Aragorn's mind, breeding and living by their own laws. He watched as a group of people on proud horses approached a lonely river. Many had silver hair and carried tall lances. A strange, fair ship waited for them, shining under a bright moon. The figures slowly boarded the vessel. Two of them, taller than the rest, walked arm in arm. Their faces were obscured by cowls, but he could tell that one was a woman. They stood on the deck of the ship and faced the shore. A man stood alone on the pebble beach, the only one who had not boarded the ship. He threw back his head and let out a long, aching cry. As it faded, the ship glided down the river without a breeze or oars, out into the flat, empty land. The vision clouded, but just before it disappeared, Aragorn glimpsed two dragons in the sky. Aragorn was first aware of the creaking. Back and forth, back and forth. The persistent sound made him open his eyes and stare at the underside of a thatched roof. A rough blanket was draped over him, concealing his nakedness. Someone had bandaged his legs and tied a clean rag around his knuckles. He was in a single-room hut. A mortar and pestle sat on a table with bowls and plants. Rows of dried herbs hung from the walls and suffused the air with strong, earthy aromas. Flames writhed inside a fireplace, before which sat a rotund woman in a wicker rocking chair. The town healer, Gertrude. Her head lolled, eyes closed. A pair of knitting needles and a ball of wool thread rested in her lap. Though Aragorn felt drained of willpower, he made himself sit up. That helped to clear his mind.
He sifted through his memories of the last 2 days. His first thought was of Garrow, and his second was of Sapphira. I hope she's in a safe place. He tried to contact her, but could not. Wherever she was, it was far from Carver Hall. At least Brom got me to Carver Hall. I wonder what happened to him. There was all that blood. Gertrude stirred and opened her sparkling eyes.
Oh, she said, you're awake. Good.
Her voice was rich and warm.
How do you feel?
Well enough.
Where's Garrow?
Gertrude dragged the chair close to the bed.
Over at Horst's. There wasn't enough room to keep both of you here. And let me tell you, it's kept me on my toes having to run back and forth, checking to see if the two of you were all right.
Aragorn swallowed his worries and asked,
How is he?
There was a long delay as she examined her hands.
Not good. He has a fever that refuses to break and his injuries aren't healing. I have to see him.
He tried to get up.
Not until you eat, she said sharply, pushing him down. I didn't spend all this time sitting by your side so you can get back up and hurt yourself. Half the skin on your legs was torn off, and your fever broke only last night. Don't worry yourself about Garrow. He'll be fine. He's a tough man.
Gertrude hung a kettle over the fire, then began chopping parsnips for soup.
How long have I been here?
2 full days.
2 days?
That meant his last meal had been 4 mornings ago. Just thinking about it made Aragorn feel weak.
Sapphira's been on her own this entire time. I hope she's all right. The whole town wants to know what happened. They sent men down to your farm and found it destroyed.
Aragorn nodded. He had expected that.
Your barn was burned down. Is that how Garrow was injured?
I don't know, said Aragorn. I wasn't there when it happened.
Well, no matter. I'm sure it'll all get untangled.
Gertrude resumed knitting while the soup cooked.
That's quite a scar on your palm.
He reflexively clenched his hand.
Yes. How did you get it?
Several possible answers came to mind. He chose the simplest one.
I've had it ever since I can remember. I never asked Garrow where it came from.
The silence remained unbroken until the soup reached a rolling boil. Gertrude poured it in a bowl and handed it to Aragorn with a spoon. He accepted it gratefully and took a cautious sip.
It was delicious.
When he finished, he asked,
Can I visit Garrow now?
Gertrude sighed.
You're a determined one, aren't you? Well, if you really want to, I won't stop you. Put on your clothes and we'll go.
She turned her back as he struggled into his pants, wincing as they dragged over the bandages, and then slipped on his shirt. Gertrude helped him stand. His legs were weak, but they did not pain him like before. Take a few steps, she commanded, then dryly observed,
At least you won't have to crawl there.
Outside, a blustery wind blew smoke from the adjacent buildings into their faces. Storm clouds hid the spine and covered the valley, while a curtain of snow advanced toward the village, obscuring the foothills. Aragorn leaned heavily on Gertrude as they made their way through Carver Hall. Horst had built his 2-story house on a hill so he could enjoy a view of the mountains. He had lavished all of his skill on it. The shale roof shadowed a railed balcony that extended from a tall window on the 2nd floor. Each waterspout was a snarling gargoyle, and every window and door was framed by carvings of serpents, hearts, ravens, and knotted vines. The door was opened by Elaine, Horst's wife, a small, willowy woman with refined features and silky blonde hair pinned into a bun. Her dress was demure and neat, and her movements graceful.
"Please come in," she said softly.
They stepped over the threshold into a large, well-lit room. A staircase with a polished balustrade curved down to the floor. The walls were the colour of honey. Elaine gave Aragorn a sad smile, but addressed Gertrude.
"I was just about to send for you. He isn't doing well. You should see him right away."
"Elaine, you'll have to help Aragorn up the stairs," Gertrude said, then hurried up them 2 at a time.
"It's okay. I can do it myself."
"Are you sure?" asked Elaine.
He nodded, but she looked doubtful.
"Well, as soon as you're done, come visit me in the kitchen. I have a fresh-baked pie you might enjoy."
As soon as she left, he sagged against the wall, welcoming the support. Then he started up the stairs, one painful step at a time. When he reached the top, he looked down a long hallway dotted with doors. The last one was open slightly. Taking a breath, he lurched toward it. Katrina stood by a fireplace, boiling rags. She looked up, murmured a condolence, and then returned to her work. Gertrude stood beside her, grinding herbs for a poultice. A bucket by her feet held snow melting into ice water. Garrow lay on a bed, piled high with blankets. Sweat covered his brow and his eyeballs flickered blindly under their lids. The skin on his face was shrunken like a cadaver's. He was still, save for subtle tremors from his shallow breathing. Aragorn touched his uncle's forehead with a feeling of unreality. It burned against his hand. He apprehensively lifted the edge of the blankets and saw that Garrow's many wounds were bound with strips of cloth. Where the bandages were being changed, the burns were exposed to the air. They had not begun to heal. Aragorn looked at Gertrude with hopeless eyes. "Can't you do anything about these?" She pressed a rag into the bucket of ice water, then draped the cool cloth over Garrow's head. "I've tried everything. Salves, poultices, tinctures, but nothing works. If the wounds closed, he would have a better chance. Still, things may turn for the better. He's hardy and strong."
Aragorn moved to a corner and sank to the floor.
"This isn't the way things are supposed to be."
Silence swallowed his thoughts. He stared blankly at the bed. After a while, he noticed Katrina kneeling beside him. She put an arm around him. When he did not respond, she diffidently left. Sometime later, the door opened and Horst came in. He talked to Gertrude in a low voice, then approached Aragorn.
"Come on, you need to get out of here."
Before Aragorn could protest, Horst dragged him to his feet and shepherded him out the door.
"I want to stay," he complained.
"You need a break and fresh air. Don't worry, you can go back soon enough," consoled Horst.
Aragorn grudgingly let the smith help him downstairs into the kitchen. Heady smells from half a dozen dishes, rich with spices and herbs, filled the air. Albrecht and Baldur were there, talking with their mother, Elaine, as she kneaded bread. The brothers fell silent as they saw Aragorn, but he had heard enough to know that they were discussing Garrow.
"Here, sit down," said Horst, offering a chair.
Aragorn sank into it gratefully.
"Thank you."
His hands were shaking slightly, so he clasped them in his lap. A plate piled high with food was set before him.
"You don't have to eat," said Elaine, "but it's there if you want."
She returned to her cooking as he picked up a fork. He could barely swallow a few bites.
"How do you feel?" asked Horst.
"Terrible."
The smith waited a moment.
"I know this isn't the best time, but we need to know what happened."
"I don't really remember."
"Aragorn," said Horst, leaning forward, "I was one of the people who went out to your farm. Your house didn't just fall apart. Something tore it to pieces. Surrounding it were tracks of a gigantic beast I've never seen or heard of before. Others saw them too. Now, if there's a shade or a monster roaming around, we have to know. You're the only one who can tell us."
Aragorn knew he had to lie.
"When I left Carverhall," he counted up the time, "4 days ago, there were strangers in town asking about a stone like the one I found."
He gestured at Horst.
"You talked to me about them, and because of that I hurried home."
All eyes were upon him. He licked his lips.
Nothing happened that night. The next morning I finished my chores and went walking in the forest. Before long I heard an explosion and saw smoke above the trees. I rushed back as fast as I could, but whoever did it was already gone. I dug through the wreckage and found Garrow."
"So then you put him on the plank and dragged him back?" asked Albrecht.
"Yes," said Aragorn. "But before I left, I looked at the path to the road. There were two pairs of tracks on it, both of them men."
He dug in his pocket and pulled out the scrap of black fabric.
"This was clenched in Garrow's hand. I think it matches what those strangers were wearing."
He set it on the table.
"It does," said Horst.
He looked both thoughtful and angry.
"And what of your legs? How were they injured?"
"I'm not sure," said Aragorn, shaking his head. "I think it happened when I dug Garrow out, but I don't know.
It wasn't until the blood started dripping down my legs that I noticed it.
That's horrible, exclaimed Elaine.
We should pursue those men, stated Albrecht hotly. They can't get away with this. With a pair of horses, we could catch them tomorrow and bring them back here.
Put that foolishness out of your head, said Horst. They could probably pick you up like a baby and throw you in a tree. Remember what happened to the house? We don't want to get in the way of those people. Besides, they have what they want now.
He looked at Aragorn.
They did take the stone, didn't they?
It wasn't in the house.
Then there's no reason for them to return now that they have it.
He gave Aragorn a piercing look.
You didn't mention anything about those strange tracks. Do you know where they came from?
Aragorn shook his head. I didn't see them.
Baldur abruptly spoke.
I don't like this. Too much of this rings of wizardry. Who are those men? Are they shades? Why did they want the stone? And how could they have destroyed the house except with dark powers?
You may be right, father. The stone might be all they wanted. But I think we will see them again.
Silence followed his words. Something had been overlooked, though Aragorn was not sure what. Then it struck him. With a sinking heart, he voiced his suspicion.
Rohan doesn't know, does he? How could I have forgotten him?
Horst shook his head.
He and Denton left a little while after you. Unless they ran into some difficulty on the road, they've been in Therensford for a couple of days now. We were going to send a message, but the weather was too cold yesterday and the day before.
Baldur and I were about to leave when you woke up, offered Albrecht. Horst ran a hand through his beard.
Go on, both of you. I'll help you saddle the horses.
Baldur turned to Aragorn.
I'll break it to him gently, he promised. Then followed Horst and Albrecht out of the kitchen.
Aragorn remained at the table, his eyes focused on a knot in the wood. Every excruciating detail was clear to him, the twisting grain, an asymmetrical bump, three little ridges with a fleck of colour. The knot was filled with endless detail. The closer he looked, the more he saw. He searched for answers in it, but if there were any, they eluded him. A faint call broke through his pounding thoughts. It sounded like yelling from outside. He ignored it. Let someone else deal with it. Several minutes later, he heard it again, louder than before. Angrily, he blocked it out.
Why can't they be quiet? Garrow's resting.
He glanced at Elaine, but she did not seem to be bothered by the noise.
Aragorn!
The roar was so strong, he almost fell out of the chair. He peered around in alarm, but nothing had changed. He suddenly realized that the shouts had been inside his head.
Saphira?
He asked anxiously. There was a pause.
Yes, stony ears.
Relief seeped into him.
Where are you?
She sent him an image of a small clump of trees.
I tried to contact you many times, but you were beyond reach.
I was sick, but I'm better now. Why couldn't I sense you earlier?
After two nights of waiting, hunger bested me. I had to hunt.
Did you catch anything?
A young buck. He was wise enough to guard against the predators of land, but not those of sky. When I first caught him in my jaws, he kicked vigorously and tried to escape. I was stronger, though, and when defeat became unavoidable, he gave up and died. Does Garrow also fight the inevitable?
I don't know.
He told her the particulars, then said,
It'll be a long time, if ever, before we can go home. I won't be able to see you for at least a couple of days. You might as well make yourself comfortable.
Unhappily, she said,
I will do as you say, but do not take too long.
They parted reluctantly. He looked out a window and was surprised to see that the sun had set. Feeling very tired, he limped to Elaine, who was wrapping meat pies with oilcloth.
I'm going back to Gertrude's house to sleep, he said.
She finished with the packages and asked,
Why don't you stay with us? You'll be closer to your uncle, and Gertrude can have her bed back.
Do you have enough room? He asked, wavering.
Of course, she wiped her hands. Come with me. I'll get everything ready.
She escorted him upstairs to an empty room. He sat on the edge of the bed.
Do you need anything else? She asked. He shook his head. In that case, I'll be downstairs. Call me if you need help.
He listened as she descended the stairs. Then he opened the door and slipped down the hallway to Garrow's room. Gertrude gave him a small smile over her darting knitting needles.
How is he? Whispered Aragon.
Her voice rasped with fatigue.
He's weak. But the fever's gone down a little, and some of the burns look better. We'll have to wait and see. But this could mean he'll recover.
That lightened Aragon's mood, and he returned to his room. The darkness seemed unfriendly as he huddled under the blankets. Eventually, he fell asleep, healing the wounds his body and soul had suffered.
The Madness of Life. It was dark when Aragon jolted upright in bed, breathing hard. The room was chilly. Goosebumps formed on his arms and shoulders. It was a few hours before dawn, the time when nothing moves and life waits for the first warm touches of sunlight. His heart pounded as a terrible premonition gripped him. It felt like a shroud lay over the world, and its darkest corner was over his room. He quietly got out of bed and dressed. With apprehension, he hurried down the hallway. Alarm shot through him when he saw the door to Garrow's room open, and people clustered inside. Garrow lay peacefully on the bed. He was dressed in clean clothes. His hair had been combed back, and his face was calm. He might have been sleeping, if not for the silver amulet clasped around his neck and the sprig of dried hemlock on his chest, the last gifts from the living to the dead. Katrina stood next to the bed, face pale and eyes downcast. He heard her whisper,
"I had hoped to call him father one day."
"Call him father," he thought bitterly. "A right even I don't have."
He felt like a ghost, drained of all vitality. Everything was insubstantial except for Garrow's face. Tears flooded Aragon's cheeks. He stood there, shoulders shaking, but did not cry out. Mother, aunt, uncle, he had lost them all.
The weight of his grief was crushing, a monstrous force that left him tottering.
Someone led him back to his room, uttering consolations. He fell on the bed, wrapped his arms around his head, and sobbed convulsively. He felt Saphira contact him, but he pushed her aside and let himself be swept away by sorrow. He could not accept that Garrow was gone. If he did, what was left to believe in? Only a merciless, uncaring world that snuffed lives like candles before a wind. Frustrated and terrified, he turned his tear-dampened face toward the heavens and shouted, "What god would do this? Show yourself!" He heard people running to his room, but no answer came from above. "He didn't deserve this!" Comforting hands touched him, and he was aware of Elaine sitting next to him. She held him as he cried, and eventually, exhausted, he slipped unwillingly into sleep.
A Rider's Blade. Anguish enveloped Aragon as he awoke. Though he kept his eyes closed, they could not stop a fresh flow of tears. He searched for some idea or hope to help him keep his sanity.
"I can't live with this," he moaned.
"Then don't."
Saphira's words reverberated in his head.
"How? Garrow is gone forever, and in time I must meet the same fate. Love, family, accomplishments, they are all torn away, leaving nothing. What is the worth of anything we do?"
"The worth is in the act. Your worth halts when you surrender the will to change and experience life. But options are before you. Choose one and dedicate yourself to it. The deeds will give you new hope and purpose."
"But what can I do?"
"The only true guide is your heart. Nothing less than its supreme desire can help you."
She left him to ponder her statements. Aragon examined his emotions. It surprised him that more than grief he found a searing anger.
"What do you want me to do? Pursue the strangers?"
"Yes."
Her frank answer confused him. He took a deep, trembling breath.
"Why?"
"Remember what you said in the spine?
how you reminded me of my duty as dragon, and I returned with you despite the urging of my instinct. So too must you control yourself. I thought long and deep the past few days, and I realized what it means to be dragon and rider.